Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt into rewards.
Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Big weekend, hey. Huh, Jill?
Yes, we had a great weekend.
We're in Atlanta this weekend teaching the Jake and Gino community all about finance, right? And now we're back. We've got a great podcast scheduled.
I'm excited for this one.
Our guest today is Jolene Filo. Jolene, she's the author of 5 resource books for the special needs community and co-authored Every Child Welcome, a ministry handbook for including kids with special needs. During Jolene's 25-year career as an educator, she has collaborated with special education teachers to mainstream children in her elementary classroom. Please welcome Jolene Filo to the show. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much for having me.
Jolene, my first question is, I want you to take me back to May 23rd, 1982, when your son was born. Can you give me, you know, the euphoria, the feeling, and then the after effects?
Sure. Our son was born shortly after midnight on May 23rd, 1982, which means I am soon going to be the parent of a 40-year-old, which I still can't wrap my head around. He had a normal birth. In fact, it was a very easy labor and delivery. He was small for his age. And in the middle of the night, my husband started coming back to my room and saying, you know what, they're around Alan's little isolette, and now they've raised his bed, you know, so his head is elevated. And about 7:30 in the morning, the doctor came in and sat down next to me. And that is never a good sign when the doctor sits down next to you in the hospital, and said that Alan was having trouble breathing. They wanted to send him to Rapid City. Alan was born in Spearfish, South Dakota. So they wanted to send him about 40 miles away to a regional hospital to figure out what was going on. And later that morning, I received a call from a pediatrician I'd never met, who told me that our son had a tracheal esophageal fistula, which basically means his esophagus came down and formed a blind pouch. It hooked into his trachea. And so he needed to be life flighted as soon as possible to have surgery for this life-threatening condition.
And what were you thinking about when you heard that noise? What were the emotions?
I was just thinking, like, this can't be happening to me. This can't be happening to us. And I don't want to make any decisions without my husband. Mm-hmm. And he had gone to take a shower at a friend's house, because back then there weren't any showers or anything like that for family members. And all I wanted was to wait and not have to make that decision myself. You know, I'm 25 years old. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, no, we need to know right away, because the sooner we can send him off so we can have surgery, and that lowers chances of complications. And so I'm sitting there, and this isn't even in my own hospital room. They had had to wheel me out to the nurse's station. So there are like 7 nurses and nurses' aides listening in on this conversation. And all I could think was, I'm going to need my parents. And they live closer to Omaha, which was one of the hospitals we could send him to, than Denver, which was the other choice. And so I was like, I guess Omaha. And then I spent the next like 12 hours crying, mm-hmm. pretty much, you know, just, and every time somebody did something kind to me, I cried harder. Mm-hmm. So that's all I did.
Wow. So in that moment, now you tell us about your son, tell us about the, you know, the next few years in a sense, tell us about your story.
Yeah. Those next few years were tough. Mm-hmm. Alan had his surgery the day he was born. We received word that night that he'd come through it very well. We got down to him a couple days later and were able to hold him for the first time since his birth. And he was all connected to all sorts of tubes and wires and stuff. But he, in 2.5 weeks, he recovered completely from that surgery, was able to eat by mouth, and he was kind of a NICU rock star, mm-hmm. where he was, because he was a full-term baby, where many of those babies were were preemies. Mm-hmm. And so he was much more alert. We were able to take him home. We didn't take him right home because that was 750 miles away from that hospital. Mm-hmm. So we went up to my parents about 2.5 hours away, stayed there for a couple weeks, then went home. Everything went well for about 7 weeks. And then I was nursing him one night and he pulled away and, passed out. And I screamed for my husband and he came and did kind of baby CPR, sort of, only he didn't know what he was doing, but got him breathing again. That led to another trip to Rapid City, another life flight. And he had to have more corrective surgery. To make a very long story short, in the next 5 years, he had like 7 pretty major surgeries to get everything corrected and lots of tests and procedures. And then another surgery at age 15. And that was his last surgery.
How does that affect the family as far as the dynamic between you, yeah, and your husband, mm-hmm, your parents, your in-laws, your other children? How did that affect the dynamic?
Well, we didn't have any other children yet. So initially that didn't affect him during his early years. Of course, my husband being 750 miles away from home, I was a teacher and our son was born right the day after school got out. So I had 3 months, to be with him. My husband had to go back and go to work. So, we were talking by phone calls. There was no internet. There were no cell phones. So it was always landline calls and they were expensive. So we had to limit that. Both our sets of parents were kind of reeling. Because, we had no indication beforehand that there were going to be any issues. And so they were grieving. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of support. That was the best thing about it. And our families were always there for us. They rerouted travel plans so that, like, my mother-in-law came and visited while we were at my parents' home after our son came home from NICU, just so that they could be involved. But over the years, it was just hard. We missed Thanksgivings. We missed Christmases and holidays because we were doing surgeries. And then when our daughter was born, she's 6 years younger than our son. So she was 8 when he had his surgery when he was 15. And we had to do it over Christmas vacation or right before Christmas so we could take advantage of Christmas vacation so he wouldn't miss as much school. Mm-hmm. After post-surgery. But that meant that I had to miss my daughter's third grade Christmas concert. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was their big elementary concert. And I was just devastated because I was an elementary teacher in that district. And here I shepherded many students. I taught third grade. I shepherded all these kids through their third grade programs. And I wasn't going to be there for my daughters. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was really tough. Thankfully, I worked with a wonderful staff. And so the music teacher made sure that they videotaped the whole concert and zoomed in on my daughter a number of times, and especially her little special part, so that we could watch that together later. But it did make things difficult. It didn't make things impossible. And I would say in the end, it made our family a lot more resilient and better able to handle future issues as they came up, because we realized, that aren't ideal can happen, but you can still find joy in them and you can still move forward.
So you've mentioned a couple of the difficulties you've gone through. What other difficulties did you see and did you face as you've gone through these last 20 or 30 years?
Well, I would say the biggest difficulty, and it's the reason that I started my career as a writer, it is the isolation that you feel. I just will never forget that, being totally alone when we received the news of our son's diagnosis, or being alone in the hallway while I could hear him screaming while they were putting an IV in, or mm-hmm. being alone in the surgery waiting room while he was going through one of his long surgeries, because, my husband and I couldn't both always take off time together. One of us had to work or take care of our daughter, and the other one then was with our son. And that feeling of isolation is why I started writing, because I don't want parents ever to feel that they are alone. Mm-hmm. There are many more resources with the internet. Parents who have kids in the hospital or wherever can locate those things or plug into them, I should say. And so I find it my job to help locate the resources that they don't have the brain space to find themselves. So I would say that was the biggest thing.
I want to talk about the book. I'm holding it up for the YouTube. Sharing Love Abundantly in Special Needs Families. It is an incredible book. I just, you know, you have so many stories in there of other people's, and you talk about the five love languages. And because we do have a lot of families that we know with children with disabilities, and some of them are nonverbal. And you know, I could see the mom's frustration. And, you know, like you said, that it's just constant exhaustion. But I noticed something that you said, which was really beautiful, is finding the joy in those little moments. And, you know, you said something in the book that I loved, to see and learn how to find the love languages of the child when they're nonverbal. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yes. That was one of my big questions when I went into writing this book, was that aspect, because our son was and continues to be very verbal. In fact, our joke around the house was, if you make eye contact with him, you're going to lose 15 minutes of your life because he can go on that long. So that the verbal part was never an issue. And yet so many of the parents I've met along the way since I started writing have children who either are totally nonverbal or have some communication delays. Right. And so my question was, how are we going to figure out their love languages? And the parents who I interviewed were the people who had the solutions, and interviewing them was absolutely delightful because all the parents that I interviewed were already using the love languages. They'd figured it out for themselves. And so the ones who had kids with communication issues, I really zeroed in on. And basically what they said was, you just have to have very keen observation skills. You have to watch your kids because they are communicating with you. They're just not using words. Mm-hmm. So you were always looking for how do they respond when, say, when they receive a gift, which is one love language? How do they respond when I give them words of affirmation or spend quality time with them, or how do they respond to physical touch, or when I do acts of service? And when you find the one that really lights them up and that you can see really motivates them, you probably have a good handle on their love language. And one of the moms gave me three questions that they had used. And one was, what calms my child? So when I do this, it calms them. What motivates my child? And then where does my child choose to spend their time? And if you can answer those three questions with one of the five love languages, I would say if you can get two out of three of them and they point to one love language, you've probably found their primary love language and possibly their secondary one.
Let's repeat those. Number one,
I have those written down.
What calms my child? Number one. Actually, my wife can ask me that. Julie, what calms me, Julie? I think a nice little hug calms me down. The second is, what motivates my child? And the third one is, where do they choose to spend time?
Those are important questions. And, you know, it's interesting because it's almost even, you know, a younger child, we could ask those questions to ourselves for even the baby ages. And, you know, and we never really think about that. We just are doing, keeping busy, trying to figure things out, waiting for them to tell us these things. And half the time they don't even know, especially when they're younger or if they have special needs. But this, actually, we have to start paying attention. And just like you said, just be aware and observe what's going on. And you know your child so well, you know when they're calm, you know when they're not. And that's what we have to go with. Because half the time as a parent, we want them to want what we want. You know what I mean? And we have to remember it's what their love languages is instead of what we think it should be.
And Jolene, we did a podcast, and everybody listening, with Dr. Gary Chapman a few months back. Go on the Multifamily Zone podcast and listen to the five love languages. So he goes into them and documents all of them thoroughly, and we go through them, and he just does a great job. It was really life-changing for my wife and I to listen to him and to interview him. How can extended family help in this situation?
This is a hard one. And I have to just cut in because sometimes we don't know what to do. And you do come across that in the book a lot, where a lot of people, outsiders, they're not sure how to help or what to say. They're just uncomfortable. So tell us.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They don't want to offend.
Right.
They don't want to bring up emotions that they're afraid will, you know, send a parent into a tailspin or whatever. They don't want to say something in front of the kids that they think the kids might take offense at, or, you know, might not be kind to them. So our main tactic is, well, let's just kind of back off. And they'll let us know when they need something. Well, and they can't because families raising kids with special needs are so busy and so overwhelmed that they just don't, they usually don't reach out until things reach a crisis point and they have to. So we can, as extended family and friends, we can gather around them in a lot of ways. And the first thing is, if this is a family that maybe doesn't know about the love languages yet, give them the book. I'm not trying to sell books, but, you know, give them the book and even go through the quizzes with them.
I'm trying to sell books. Let me sell some books here. Yes.
But you have a quality book that can help. So let's sell it.
Okay. That's fine. But I'm not trying to push it. I'm not here trying to do a sales project.
Of course.
The book has quizzes that you can use with the parents, the children, the siblings, different ages of kids, and ideas for kids who are too young to take the quiz or developmentally delayed, whatever. So start there. And see if you can figure out their love languages and then start speaking them. So if they are a family that loves acts of service, if let's say the mother likes acts of service, offer to drop off their kids at school or bring a meal once a week or even help with the laundry. Mm-hmm. If you find out that the child loves quality time, maybe you could start coming over and spending a little quality time with that child. Not only will that benefit the child in the moment and give the parents a little bit of a break. Mm-hmm. But you are, and I can't stress how important this is, you are making that child's life richer because many children who have special needs do not have a lot of peers or a big friend group or a big social group. So if you can become a part of their life, you have made a huge difference. But I think the main thing we can do is think of those practical things that we can speak as their love languages to help ease the family's to-do list a little bit. And I mentioned a few of those already, and they're usually really simple. They can also be things like offering to do things with the siblings of the typical siblings, because they often, because of the other child's significant needs, don't get as much attention. And I think that's huge. I remember when I was a kid, my dad was in a wheelchair, and so he couldn't take us a lot of places. And there was this elderly gentleman in our church who would call every year and take us to the Easter egg hunt. Mm-hmm. And it was always a little bit awkward because we didn't really know him that well. And to us, he was probably, you know, older than dirt. Mm-hmm. He was not a young man, even back then. And yet, when I look back at that, what he was doing was providing a morning for my mother, who worked full time, took care of three kids, and a sick husband, providing a morning where she had a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. So just think outside the box, figure out the person's love language, and then come up with practical ways to help the family and specifically state those. Don't say, oh, let me know if there's something I can do. Yeah. Specifically say what it is you'd like to do so that the family doesn't have to think of it, and they're much more likely to say, oh yes, that would be wonderful, than feel like they're imposing on you by suggesting something to you.
I like that a lot, actually, because I agree with you. It's how we approach the question makes a difference. I do like that. What is your message to the parents out there of special needs? I mean, you know, and you can talk about this as well. It's just exhausting, complete exhaustion, maybe even hopelessness, you know, fear of the future, fear of what's going to happen, you know, because we don't know. I want you to just take us through that a little bit and give the parents out there, you know, some hope.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that you're facing. You have time restraints, you have financial restraints, you're probably dealing with grief about the child you thought you were going to have. Though you love the child you have, you still have to kind of let go of those old dreams, and that's hard. You're isolated. And in the pandemic, doubly isolated. You might have geographic separation from your spouse for a while because of treatment. Yeah. You are worrying about the future. Will my child live? And then if my child lives, who's going to take care of them after I'm no longer around? And that's a huge one. And then there's just that lack of support we we live with because people are afraid to come into our world. Mm-hmm. So my best advice to parents is that you need to be honest with other people about what you're going through. Now, you aren't going to be able to be honest with everyone. Mm-hmm. You can't tell everybody, oh, these are the things that we're dealing with every day. But you should be able to find one or two people who you can be really honest with about, I'm really struggling with this and I need some help. And could you come into my world and be that help to me? Mm-hmm. I often tell parents, even though I tell extended family and friends, you should be coming up with specific things. Mm-hmm. I also tell parents, make a list of things that you really need help with, so that when somebody says, if there's something I can do to help, please let me know. You have several ideas and you could go over them with that person, mm-hmm, and honestly share your needs and see if there's a way they can help you with one of them. Mm-hmm. Don't try and be a martyr. Don't try and do it all yourself. My mother tried that for many years, and we were expected as kids to do things we shouldn't have, you know, in caretaking with my father. Don't put that on your children. Mm-hmm. Bring in other adults who can help you with that.
You bring that up. That's interesting. And you had a daughter who was 6 years younger than your son. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that where you don't put all that pressure on your daughter to give that extra help? You know what I mean? And be the mother and let her be the little girl in a sense, right? Because we do want the help from anyone that's there able to do it. And sometimes we focus all around that one child instead of the whole family.
Yeah, that wasn't such a big issue for us because of the age difference, and our son's health struggles were pretty much out of the picture, except for when he was 15 at that point. So she didn't experience a lot of that pressure, but we were always very cognizant of the fact that children need to be children, mm-hmm, and their work is play. And we have to give children, all children, time to play. And that includes the siblings of kids who have special needs. Right. If that means that you're going to have to come up with maybe there's a child in their class or a neighbor where they could go to their house sometimes and have that experience of not having to deal with that at all, give them that space. We had an aunt and uncle when we were growing up who did a lot of stuff with us, did the things dad couldn't do. They took us camping. They did all sorts of things. And that gave my brother and sister and I a view of a more traditional family structure and how a husband and wife who are both healthy interact with one another. And it gave us a look at what childhood is like. So we were given space to be kids. So any way you can do that, even if it means that once a week, you are going to do errands while your spouse or maybe an extended family member comes in and takes care of the child with special needs. And you take the typical sibling with you to run errands, and then you stop and go through the McDonald's drive-thru for an ice cream cone or whatever. Mm-hmm. You do that to give them a little bit of that childhood freedom and that attention that they need, or whatever it might be. You know, put the child with disabilities to bed early so you guys can play some games one-on-one. I mean, we do that with our typical kids, right? Don't we talk about date nights or having the time for this child? Well, we need to do that in special needs families too. It just takes a little more creativity and planning.
Sure, definitely. What about marriage is difficult in itself without children, right? And it's beautiful and great. But when you come and you have children, that's another layer of, you know, you're all trying to figure out how we're going to parent. And then you put on top of it a special needs child. And, you know, we've seen it before. Like I said, we do know a lot of families with special needs, and it is a huge stress on the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of breakups, unfortunately, because of it. And there's a, like you said before, there's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of things in there emotionally as well. What have you seen? You've talked to a lot of families, a lot of couples, a lot of moms and dads out there that are dealing with. What has helped them? You know, is it the five love languages? Because we do sometimes forget about when we're going through something really difficult with a child, we forget about our marriage. We kind of put that aside and we all focus on the person that needs the most help at the time, but sometimes that's a long time and we put everyone else on hold. So what would you say to those parents out there that are struggling and trying to figure things out? The five love languages, what would you recommend?
I think the five love languages are a great place to start. And that's why sharing love abundantly and special needs starts with the relationship between spouses, because that has to be strong. The marriage needs to be strong first. Mm-hmm. And a really easy way to do that is to figure out your spouse's love language and start speaking it more consistently. And the book is full of just inexpensive, like easy ways that you can do it. And I would just encourage people to look through that and find a few that they could use. I also think that taking advantage, if you have young kids, of getting them into the doctor and maybe seeing if they qualify for early childhood intervention, which provides a lot of therapies and different resources for families, and take advantage of those, because the more help that you get that way, and the more documented it is, you know, you might be able to get on a Social Security waiver and then start being able to get some in-home help, depending on the child's level of need. Your child might be able to go to early childhood preschool through the schools, which is free. And you know, I taught for enough years to realize that at the end of the summer, parents of students I was soon going to have would come up and say, oh, I'm so glad school is starting, because, you know, just being with the kids all summer, there's so much to do and we finally get a little time. Well, I agree. It is a wonderful thing. And here's an opportunity possibly for parents of kids with special needs to have trained professionals working with their children, and you get a few hours of a break for a day. And that's wonderful. Other things, I've had parents that figured out ways to apply for programs where they could get some assistance, and they would have someone come in their house for a couple hours, a few times a week, and then the parents would take a nap.
Yeah.
There are a lot of good, if you're in an area with a church that offers like a special needs ministry or a respite program, those are open to the whole community. You don't have to be a member of those churches. They're there to serve families. And that provides an opportunity several times a year for you to drop your child off, maybe go out to eat, you know, maybe go do whatever you want to do. So take advantage of those things. Check with your library. And I would encourage people also just to go on Facebook and see if they can find a group that is about your child's disability, and make sure it's a positive group. You don't want to get in on one that's constantly complaining and just talking about how terrible things are. There's one out there that provides resources or gives you a chance to offer a question. What do you do when your child does this? You can get some really practical ideas, and those parents know where the resources are related to their child's disability. So that can be another good place to find those resources that give you time to concentrate on your spouse occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Jolene, how has your life been enriched having a child with special needs?
Oh, you know, our lives are so different than they would have been otherwise. I always wanted to be a teacher, and I did teach for 25 years, partially because I carried the insurance for a lot of years. And with a child like ours, you didn't drop insurance, but I love teaching. But another thing that happened was my husband very soon realized that one of us needed to have some medical training, and it wasn't going to be me because I can't stand blood and any of that kind of stuff. So he became an EMT because we lived in a very rural area at that point. And he became very interested in that. And when we moved from South Dakota to Iowa a few years later, he entered nursing school because he enjoyed it so much. Oh. And so that led to his whole career, which he just retired from recently. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, after teaching for 25 years, I just could not get rid of that feeling that there was maybe something I could be offering to parents. And so it led to me leaving teaching to start writing and speaking, and, you know, speaking to the special needs community. And so it's led to books. One of my books is on PTSD in children. I now teach a college class about that for educators. So it's enriched us in those ways. But another way is it's just given us that understanding that just because it seems like it's bad at the moment, it's still good. And good, God can bring good out of that.
Yes.
And so it kind of enriches us in that, oh yeah, things aren't going well right now. It'll be interesting to see how God makes that result in some good when I cannot see anything good about it. And I think that's something we've been able to pass down to our children and our grandchildren too.
Yeah, that's a great message, because when you're in it, right, when you're in the midst of the struggle and the loneliness, as you mentioned, you don't see it, but to know that it's there, to find the joy in that moment, really helps you move forward, right? It's incredible. Yeah.
I could keep going on. It just, sometimes I haven't talked about business on this show at all. Usually I talk business. My wife talks.
Somehow real estate gets involved.
My wife talks relationships. And I think about it. If you're an entrepreneur, you're coming up with problems all the time and problems and problems. Sometimes we need to look at the opportunities and the good things in that. That's how what comes across in my mind, that we're stuck in a bad situation for so long, but there's got to be something positive about it. And what can I pull from it? And there's so many things that you've done. And the great thing about it is you're seeking to serve now. You've created your own ministry where you had, I guess, an immense problem, but you've turned that into such a positive. And that's by staying positive, by utilizing all of the tools and the techniques that you've learned, the strategies, getting help from others and all that. And that's an amazing story. So for all the listeners out there, how can they get a hold of you? How can they get all these tools that you're providing them?
Sure. You can go to my website. My website for special needs parents is differentdream.com. And that has links to any of the books I've written so that you can purchase them. Starting a new venture, actually, I'm starting to write fiction. And my first fiction book will come out next June. And you can find out more about that at my other website, jolenephilo.com. The book is a cozy mystery, and it actually features some characters who have disabilities, and they're not just on the sidelines of the story, but part of it.
All right. That is awesome.
You know, everyone listening right now, Jolene mentioned, you know, we all either know someone with children with disabilities or we have them in our home. And there's so much, we're not alone. People are not alone out there. And that's the real message, is there are so many resources out there. The book honestly has a lot of resources that I just encourage everyone to read, because like I said, we all know someone. And what you said before is a great advice, not asking someone, do you need anything? Do you want me to help? It's specifically, can I help with the laundry? Can I help with driving your other children somewhere? Can I help by coming over? Those specific questions to that person, that mother that's struggling, really makes a difference.
I'm very specific with my wife.
Yes,
my,
he is.
We have dinner tonight. Can you make me a really good dinner tonight? I am very specific.
You got to be specific, or I just won't make anything that I want. That's just
no
what
pasta.
It is.
Just a little bit of meat. I'm very specific. And I really enjoyed the conversation. I mean, it saddens me sometimes to think about parents struggling and having that burden, and it's so much different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. There's so many more resources out there. The internet's out there. There's so many more support groups out there. There's so much more education and materials out there. So for anybody listening to this, who even if you know somebody who has a child with special needs, listen to the podcast again, share the podcast with other people, go to Jolene's websites and start sharing these resources, because it's amazing. You know, you've had a great career, a long career. And, you know, like I say, once again, you created so many opportunities out of what you would have thought 30 and 40 years ago were huge and massive problems. And they were, and you've created an amazing and abundant life. So I just want to thank you for being on the show. It was really great getting to know you, getting to meet you, and continued success.
Yes,
and looking forward to the book in the summertime.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches. Now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles. Just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.